Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, when oral histories of Sephardi Jews in London were recorded, what differences were there in the ways men and women approached being interviewed? Sharon Rapoport is an Israeli oral historian and documentary filmmaker, specializing in documenting life stories and community histories. Her expertise includes life history interviews, building archives, and developing educational programs. She was involved with Sephardi Voices UK from its inception until 2016, when she returned to Israel, where she's the COO of Israel Story and works for Yad Vashem, documenting life history testimonies from Holocaust survivors.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Sharon. I find that the project you mentioned to me about the oral histories that you've done with Sephardic Jews in London is very, very interesting. How did the idea come about?
The idea is actually a long story. It started way back before when I lived in Israel in the 80s. And I lived in Jerusalem in a place full of Ashkenazim. And there was no mention or anything to do with the Sephardic culture. We did have all these Sephardic family among us, and to be a Sephardic Jew in a Samech Tet, which means a good Sephardi, was something that was well known in Jerusalem. I myself was 9 generations Sephardic, a good Sephardic, but there was no mention to it. So when I came to London and I started working on all kinds of projects, I understood that when people think about Jews, when the non-Jews think about Jews, they always think about the Ashkenazi Jew. It's much to do because of the Holocaust, and it's much to do, but that's their perception. And I understood that there's a whole community with its heritage and its history that doesn't have any space there. So we started on this project to record life stories of people that came from Arab-speaking countries and what is called Sephardic, and that arrived to London in the 50s and made there their home. Now they're doing this project actually also in Israel, something very similar.
So how long were you doing this in London?
I was doing it when I was in London, I was doing it for 4 or 5 years. It's going on. It's led by a professor from Miami University named Henry Green, and a doctor anthropologist in London named Bea Lepkovich, and she actually is still working on the project. I came back from London and I work now in Israel. But while being in London, I interviewed about 80 Sephardi people, and I interviewed them about their histories, their home, their heritage, the way that they keep on their heritage, and their understandings of belonging. Because one thing that was really interesting, that many of them, although living in London for a long, long time, they didn't feel that they belonged. When I asked them, where do they belong to? It wasn't London. They still went back to the places they either were born in, or some of them also talked about Israel as this kind of belonging, higher belonging. But usually it wasn't England, it wasn't London, although London was their home from the 50s.
How did you find them?
Oh, for me it was fantastic, because it was a project that I was Israeli living in London, and suddenly my Sephardic heritage that I never had any connection to, and as I said in the beginning, I didn't ever think it's part of me, suddenly I dealt with it. And my Hebrew, let's say, in many cases, they were talking, let's say, about cooking. And they were talking about all these things of kusamach, all kinds of recipes that I remembered from my grandmother. which, as I said, she was Fardi, but we never took any notice of it. There was nothing to do with it. So suddenly, together with interviewing the people, it brought a lot of things from myself, from my identity. And suddenly I said, you know what? I'm not totally Ashkenazi. I'm part.
Where did you find them? How did you come into contact with them?
I came into contact that I understood that the synagogues are a very, very good place because there are many Sephardic synagogues, which in London are much smaller than the well-to-do Ashkenazi synagogues. And I used to actually work with them through the synagogues. So the synagogues used to present me, and I used to interview the people in their homes, but it was coordinated a lot of times by the rabbis, or by, because they too wanted that this heritage will be documented. And now all these life histories are in the British Library, which means that researchers from all over the world can access it.
So they were open to this. You didn't feel excluded or anything. They were welcoming?
There were many times very welcoming. Sometimes it was interesting that with men, with older men, there was this thing that there was this gender. I felt sometimes, let's say, they didn't feel it, but there was this gender problems. But when I found that there's this problem, so I tried to overcome it. And if not, I did bring in someone. You know, I felt there were places that they wanted a man to interview them, not a woman. And the interesting thing is that there are also lots of differences between the way that men and women talk about their lives. Usually women start by, I don't have anything interesting to say. What should I talk to you about? You know, while men were, most of them, very happy to start the conversation.
Did the men and women speak to you about different aspects of their lives? Like the women spoke more about home and family and the men spoke more about work or something?
Totally. The women talked a lot about, it started, as I said, about what should I talk to you about? And then they did talk a lot about what happened inside the house. And that was really interesting. You know, they were talking about what's happening indoors. They were talking about things to do with educating their children, things to do with food, things to do with Jewish celebrations. A lot of emphasis was put on food, and which was very, very different to the English diet. So that was a kind of part. Men were talking lots of time going on more about what happened politically, and what they were talking a lot about their careers, their involvement in the community. The community aspect had a big involvement. And towards the end, we were talking about how to keep the heritage. How does one keep his heritage from home? So while the men talked a lot about the tefillot and the different synagogues, the women's way of keeping the heritage is passing on all the food that they used to do. And so in this way, it was very, very different.
Can you tell us a little bit about the ages of the people you interviewed and where they were from?
Okay. We interviewed people that were around 70, 80. They were from all the Arab-speaking countries. They were from Egypt. They were from Morocco. They were from Tunis. They were from Lebanon. They were from Iran. So we were working with them. They were mostly around between 70 and 80. We even interviewed Mr. Dangul, that was at the time 96.
Wow.
But most of our interviewees were around 70 and 80, because they had to be children when they left these homes. And they had this very idealistic and very warm. It was interesting. On one hand, they had a warm place in their hearts to the places that they came from. But on the other hand, when I asked them about it, it's something that happened in the past and had nothing to do with today, which means that the Egypt of today doesn't mean anything to them, or or the Iraq of today, it's something that has passed and has left them. So together with their nostalgia, there was nothing concrete of today.
Now, you said that these results are in the British Library?
All the interviews we have interviewed are in the British Library.
Can they be consulted?
They can be accessed soon. I think they should be already digitized. Part of them are already digitized, but they can be accessed. They're going to be all of them digitized. And right now they can be accessed through the British Library.
Is there anything else about this topic that you would like to add?
Yes, I would like to add that I felt that I'm really kind of like rediscovering a community. It was something that wasn't talked about at all. And then I saw the richness of this community and, you know, how much it had a say also within the British culture, not only as immigrants that came to Britain and absorbed the British culture, but also the British culture absorbed them very well. So it's kind of a two-way phase. It doesn't go only one way. It's not only the immigrants embrace the culture, it's a two-way procedure.
Are their grandchildren just as identified with the Sephardi culture as the immigrants themselves are, or are they pretty much assimilated?
I think totally. I think what happens, like what happens lots of time with immigrant communities, so you have the immigrants that come and then their children want to be part of the culture. So they want to be English or if it's here, Israeli. But then the grandchildren go back and want to understand from where are they? Who are they? And they're the ones that are interested to listen to the grandparents. So there's also this intergenerational relationship between the grandchildren and the grandparents, while the second generation is too busy to absorb themselves into the culture.
That's very interesting because that happened also with in the United States with the Ashkenazi immigrants. I think the same thing happened. So that's interesting.
I think that, you know, we're busy. The second generation is just busy to be like everyone, to make a life. And then or it doesn't, you know, in Israel, when we talk about Holocaust survivors, there's lots of times the second generation say they had to make life go and work out, while the grandchildren, once again, they're the ones that are interested in everything. They're the ones that are interested in learning about the Holocaust. In many cases, the grandparents will talk to the grandchildren about things that happened to them while bearing it and not talking to the children themselves. So I think it happens many times between the generations. But it's very important that a youngster will know from where are his origins. Where did his grandparents come from? Well, no, what are the lines of his identity?
Yeah, I'd like to talk to you now about the work that you've done in Yad Vashem about the life stories of Holocaust survivors. Can you tell us about that project?
Yes, this is a project one of the main projects of Yad Vashem. It's interviewing Holocaust survivors about their, it's giving testimony to what they had experienced at the time of the Holocaust. This project is going on in Yad Vashem from the 50s. Now, as you can imagine, the people are getting older. Mm-hmm. And the people that were in the Holocaust then were children. Now they're around 70, 80. So actually, if in the past there was much emphasis on the historical aspect, here it's more aspects like what was it to be a child in the Holocaust? What did a child know? Because lots of times lots of times children didn't know everything to do. If a child went to a ghetto, they were not in every case he understood what does it mean. So the experience is totally different. And this is what we're trying to understand now. What was it to be a child in the Holocaust? How did this experience, what did it do to your life as an adult? What are the signs? So it's a totally new way of looking at this community. Another thing that is very interesting is, what does it mean to be a Holocaust survivor today when you're old? What is the place of your experiences, your memories? People tell me, let's say, that till when they had children of their own and were very busy and had to form their lives, they didn't talk about, they didn't think, many times they didn't want to think about the Holocaust and they didn't think. But now that they grow, they're growing older, suddenly it all comes back. And then I ask them about what do they see? What do they see? I try to ask them to describe it like parts of films. And they really describe scenes, and they really describe these things that come back to them at night. And you tell me that now there's the same scene coming back to at night. You should also understand that because they were children, their memory is constructed of what parts of their memory, but also on photos, on history. So it's much more, what we can understand from it is more the impression than what had happened exactly. So it's a bit different.
Where are these people? Are they all in Israel?
They are all in Israel or around Israel. It's a very big project. I come to people's homes and with a cameraman. And when you come to a people's home, you meet all their family. You get into their homes. Usually the family or the grandchild was the one that asked their grandparents, please do this interview. The interviews are something between 3 and 4 hours. And in the end, we leave them a USB with all the interview while we archive the interviews in Yad Vashem's archive.
How did you get involved in this project?
In Yad Vashem?
Yeah.
I'm Yad Vashem. I deal with life histories. That's what I do. I actually work in constructing histories and helping people actually find the right way to tell their own history. I'm interested in communities. So I always try. In London, I worked with the Sephardi community. Before that, I worked with the Muslim community in England. And now I work with Holocaust survivors. And I feel that I'm in a very special moment because soon they won't be with us anymore. While in the 50s, you know, all Israel was full of Holocaust survivors and all the grandparents were Holocaust survivors. Many of the grandparents were Holocaust survivors. In 10, 20 years, they won't be among us. So mm-hmm. the way I see it, it's a very pivotal moment in the history.
Are there any particularly interesting anecdotes that you can tell us about from your experience?
They're amazing anecdotes. People ask me lots of time, how do I do it? Isn't it very, very, very difficult? And I always say that while I do touch the difficult parts, you learn a lot of things. People talk to me about love. People talk to me about relationships. People talk to me about even sex. I had a few interviews that they talked about sex. People talk about many things. So it's much more than only what had happened factually. It's actually to talk to a person that, first of all, today in his old age is looking back on a very pivotal moment in his life. But around it, he talks about many, many other things. So I come out, I always say it's instead of my psychologist, I dumped her when I started working with the Holocaust survivors. So now I feel that I receive for them much more than it's not that difficult for me to do it. Although there are stories that are very, very difficult, but I feel that I get much more out of it.
Can these stories be consulted? Can they be accessed?
Of course. Again, Yad Vashem is digitizing everything right now. And they're also in the archive. So it's going to be digitized in the next 2 years. They're already doing it right now.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that we might have left out?
No, I think these two projects are, you know, something that I find that are very, very important also for Jewish history, but also for history as a whole, and for me more than anything.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very, very welcome.
That's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner @RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.